This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by Lynda.com, the online learning platform with more than 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, go to Lynda.com, that's LYNDA.com/AndroidCentral. Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 245 for Friday, July 17th, 2015. How goes it? I am Phil Nickinson. I run this little thing. I just realized the camera's stuck on me, which is, well, is that good or bad?
It's probably okay the camera's stuck on you because it looks like you got a little Nexus Cube kind of stuck between your mic if you look at where your camera is.
Let's see. I pulled it back out and plugged it in.
Perfectly glowing where your mic is.
I still have to do something with this half of the office, but I'm not doing it today. Alex Dowie, everybody.
More Nexus Qs, Phil. That's what you need.
That's Alex. He's in England. Got Andrew Martinick with us.
Again, my freaking mic is muted and hi.
That's actually how Andrew greets us most mornings, by the way.
Something like that, yeah.
Jerry Hilton ran in West Virginia.
Awesome mini Nexus Q, so.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Phil.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I always like that, like, you get to podcast on your first day. I mean, not that you take, like, 2 days off in a row or whatever, but you're well-rested on Fridays, it seems.
Yes, sir. If I'm not hungover, I'm doing great.
Fine. And poor Russell Holly, who's on 16 different kinds of cold medicine today.
What is up? New York abused me.
Yeah, it can do that. And those up and backs, that gets tiring. It's probably harder on you, I mean, because you're closer, but it's probably kind of like the travel itself is less restful, right?
Yeah, I end up, I mean, like, I'm mostly working during the travel. I don't, like, sit to chill or do anything like that because the train is comfortable enough that I can work. But, yeah, apparently walking 8 miles in 2 days without any kind of, like, allergy meds or anything took its toll on me.
Well, if it's your first time joining us for the podcast, welcome. Hi, how's it going? We do this every week. And we do it live on Fridays and recorded and all that good stuff. So I'm actually trying to, I was telling these guys earlier today, I'm trying to tighten it up. We're still going to do the news, but, like, I want to get us a little more focused because, frankly, we need to be a little more focused, I think. That wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
What
was I saying? Kind of walked ourselves right into that. But where do you want to, I mean, we've got a lot going on. It's we're getting into those weird summer months, so let's just crank it out. We've got OnePlus event in 10 days, the OnePlus 2, which, you know, they've been leaking out in drips and drabs, and that's fine. Not, I mean, it's not even leaking. It's, they're announcing, like, one feature at a time,
it's
right?
Marketing.
Yeah, and I, you know, we've talked about it plenty. I get it. But again, it's going to be the sum of the parts that really matters, right?
There's a lot we don't know yet, and a device is more than the sum of its parts, like you say. We don't know how performance is going to come through, how the software is going to shine through. We don't, you know, we have a good idea of what Oxygen OS looks like. How is it going to interact with all these different parts, like the camera and the display and all these other features that are going into it.
And then the next day we have Motorola. It's doing something.
Motorola is doing something in three cities. They have events
kind of large.
Yeah, I mean, this is why I get the impression that we talk about this internally. I think we're probably going to get more than just a new Moto G. The Moto G, I think, is pretty much a done deal. We've had it leak out that it's supposedly that's the launch date for it. We've seen pictures. Looks like a slightly upgraded Moto G, which is an important device for Motorola. Maybe not as exciting as a flagship, but I think there's also a good chance that we will get that 2015 Moto X that a lot of people are going to be waiting for.
And you had a pretty good preview up there today of what you think we're going to be getting. I mean, specs-wise, and again, I don't obsess over the specs that much, but what are we kind of looking at there, do you think?
This is mostly guesswork for the X, do you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is mostly guesswork. There's not been a whole lot leaked out about the X compared to the G. Obviously, we'd expect a Qualcomm processor. The earlier rumors were pointing to the 808, which would make sense. Given, you know, Motorola hasn't always gone for the super bleeding edge stuff. Would also make sense then to go for that just because of the power requirements, right? You're not dealing with the overhead that you would have to necessarily with the 810. So I would think probably an 808. Besides that, the rumors are all over the map. You'd imagine you'd have a RAM boost. You would have, you know, probably 32 gigs of storage as standard. The big thing we're waiting to hear is is the battery going to be any better than last year? Is it going to be more than just, you know, barely scraping to the end of the day like we saw with the 2014 Moto X? And, of course, the camera. The camera's always been a bit of a sore point for Moto phones. Like Phil was saying in previous podcasts, that every year they say, okay, the camera's really good this time. We've got this clear pixel stuff. And, you know, the past couple of years it disappointed us. Will they be able to maybe source some of the stuff that Samsung and LG are and make the switch to OIS, which seems to make a big difference in other phones? So some of it you can kind of just guess, but I think we'll be waiting to find out those details and find out how the camera and how the battery, those two key areas that a lot of phones still don't get right, see if Motorola can get it right this year.
So I'm going to be up there for that. I think I'll have Mark Wim with me. If you guys don't know Mark, Mark's awesome. He does mostly stuff on Windows Central and does
like, shoots all other videos. Yeah, on Windows Central YouTube channel.
Mark's an awesome guy. He's hilarious. He's great.
He just had a really cool one where he's riding a bike around and
I watched that stuff. So. Yeah, I watched that. That was good. I don't want to like get off on too big a tangent, but the Microsoft band's kind of cool a little bit. Well, I guess that's a little timely.
The functionality is cool.
Yeah.
The band itself is...
Yeah, and, you know, HTC this week said, oh, hey, that grip thing that we showed you guys back in Barcelona, you know, not coming anytime soon, which isn't surprising to those of us. I got to see it. I got to hold it and put it on, and it's like, okay, it's just kind of another fitness band that happens to work with one app that nobody knows anything. Okay, whatever.
And, you know, for a lot of people, myself included, like, what you get out of Android Wear, which is, like, counting your steps is, like, good enough for me. That's, like, a cool little thing. And it's definitely a different step entirely to get like a dedicated fitness band that's going to cost $150 in addition to whatever else you want to wear for additional fitness stuff that maybe you don't keep track of that closely anyway.
Yeah, I think it needed to do much more than just be a fitness band that was also integrated with all this Under Armour stuff. It needed to be something that would sell you on that HTC hardware plus Under Armour experience, and maybe needs to go back to the drawing board a little bit, and that seems to be what
that's kind of what the Microsoft band does. It does a lot of extra stuff too. It kind of straddles that line between smartwatch and fitness band.
Just tell me when one of these companies releases a sensor that you can clip to the wheel in your wheelchair, and I'll tell everybody to buy it. That's a segment they've all forgotten.
Does it need to clip? Yeah. I mean, if it's like a bracelet, you can just stick it.
And they don't even... Well, the problem is that they don't have the software ready to say, oh, okay, this is how I'm moving around. I mean, it's even the issue with all the leading trackers right now is that, you know, if you want to just like go on a run through a park, like it can handle that. You know, what if you're on a different kind of machine in the gym, or you're in a rowing machine, or
a bike?
You know, or a bike or whatever, it doesn't have necessarily the right tracking to be able to handle that.
And it's there's something there that's different. You know, it tracks your steps by the swinging of your arm. That just doesn't lend itself well to any other type of distance tracking for other things. But it I'm sure it can be done, and I hope that at least one of these companies is thinking of something you clip to the spoke of your bike wheel or your wheelchair or... You know, other ways to find out that type of data. And then
there are a few products out there already that could kind of fit that role. If you look at, you know, any kind of Fitbit with the right kind of software could probably do that.
Fitbit is close.
The Sony Core, which right now is designed to fit into other things like the Sony Smart Band. You could imagine an attachment for that would maybe go in a wheelchair. So it's not difficult. It's just getting...
Depending on the device I use, it'll either say I have zero steps if I'm on a day out, or it'll say I have like 325,000 steps from just a little movement of my arms in the chair. So I just, once the technology gets worked out, you know that's going to make people like Google, for example, want to write the software that works with that. So that's an exciting thing I'm looking forward to because it's going to happen.
Would the metal of a wheelchair, I mean, obviously it would. The question is how bad.
probably a little.
Yeah.
I think that's something they can probably work around.
Mm-hmm. Find, I mean, if you think about it, there are already different setups to where you can have, you know, you have your, like, your phone is your home base, and then it can have all these extra little things. You know, Nike did that thing where it's in your shoe for a while, and, you know, there are different jawbones and things that clip onto your belt instead of being on your wrist. So they just need to write the software that knows exactly what that activity is like.
The sheriff's department can put a thing on your ankle that is not affected by your wheelchair. I'll just say that.
So you've heard.
Yes, that's what I've been told.
What else is going on? I saw today Cortana has leaked out. Well, it's not leaked. The beta came out, which means people started passing it around left and right. I don't know. I'm trying to remember. Did I sign up for the beta? I bet I didn't. Do I need to be excited about Cortana for Android? I mean, it's kind of like, to me, it's kind of like, even though it's Cortana, and Cortana's really good, like the SoundHound thing, I don't,
you know,
why do I want something that's not Google now?
It'd make a lot more sense if you were somebody who's getting ready to update your PC to Windows 10 right now and have Cortana built in there as well, you know. But the thing is, you already use Google Now, and you may, you know, like the way that that works and not want to learn a new system. And you know what? You can install Chrome and get some of that shared Google Now functionality on your desktop too, and get it on Mac as well.
I think it's the same principle if you look at the way Google Now works on iOS. It's great in the Google app on iOS, but it's always going to play second fiddle to Siri that is baked into the OS that has its own shortcut key behind it. That's always going to be easier to get to than finding the icon and pressing it. And it's the same challenge that any kind of assistant app that isn't native to the platform has to go up against.
I mean, we already seen this. The Google Now experience on the iPhone is just not that great.
Well, and that has a lot to do with, I hate to use the word permissions, but an application from the company who makes the operating system for your phone is just going to be able to work better with all of your data than a third party.
That makes the service, that makes, you know, not just the OS, but the underlying services, because that's really what we're talking here.
Right. I mean, I'm talking about access to your data.
Right.
You don't necessarily, and I'm not saying don't trust Microsoft, but you don't necessarily want a third-party app like Cortana to have access to all of your data, even if it could.
But it's one of the really cool things about the way Cortana works is the very first thing it does as a setup process is you explicitly tell it what information it's allowed to have access to, and that's when it was on Windows Phone. I'm actually pretty excited about Cortana, but I'm also a Windows user on my desktop here at work and an Xbox user in the living room, so I'm already kind of surrounded by Cortana. And I wind up using Cortana for search a little more often when I'm at my desk than I do Google Now. So it may end up being something that I end up using more. I'm not sure yet. But I've been following this one for a while, and I'm kind of excited about it. I hope that it actually works and isn't terrible.
So now that they're going to do Cortana on Android, do you think that Microsoft to take the next step and build like a home launcher that bakes Cortana into the Android launcher like Google Now into the Google Now launcher does?
It wouldn't shock me. I mean, Microsoft already has a launcher for Android.
That way they come together and it's, you know, it's live and ready to go. So it's not like launching an app to get into it. It's a little more seamless.
I would definitely think that's the way that we see that go.
That'll be a fun little project. Like, how do you make a Microsoft Android phone, you know?
You buy that, was it the Galaxy S on Verizon?
No, I think I still have that one here somewhere, maybe.
Sweet Bing bar
there's,
on that
There's
thing.
Your Bing phone.
No.
Go back and buy Fascinate or whatever.
But you know what I mean? Like,
get some gingerbread going.
Like, what would it look like? How well would it work with, you know, a Cortana launcher and Outlook?
Well, Microsoft makes some cool Android apps. I would not put it past them being able to make a nice integrated launcher experience Cortana in it.
Yeah, I mean the launcher they have it's like a lock screen replacement too, and it's actually kind of nuts. I mean, you really have to give in to the Microsoft experience in order to really appreciate it. But as launcher replacement go, it's pretty creative.
What else do we have going on?
Well, the HTC One M9 Plus is coming to Europe around this week. Interesting little phone. I guess maybe not so little. It's basically a bigger version of the M9 with a bunch of extra features. You got a fingerprint reader on the bottom speaker, kind of separating the speaker, the lower area, and an M8 style duo camera on the back. Those are the main sort of user-facing features that are different. Different CPU inside as well, MediaTek chip. And it's also bigger. It's a 5.2-inch QHD display. Beyond that, looks and feels a lot like an M9. The size difference obviously isn't huge. You're going from 5-inch to 5.2. But with a few extra features, will be interesting to see when they launch it, if it can maybe help lift them out of this slump that they're in with the M9 right now. But it doesn't. It's the same main camera around the back. A lot of similarities there with the M9, just a few extra features and a little bit bigger.
And then we have new Desire phones coming to the U.S. And this is kind of interesting. It's actually, it's not just three phones. It's actually four phones. You've got the 520. Oh, God, I got to keep looking this up because I keep getting it wrong.
626, the 620, and the 5-something.
There's one with an S at the end.
The 520. It was 626S. I just keep screwing the numbers up. And you've got it's an interesting mix between like prepaid and postpaid, from 4.5 inches to 5 inches. And I mean, really, it's like a low-cost LTE play, and it's weird that people are still saying these companies are still saying it's LTE. Like you don't, who doesn't have LTE at this point?
And but I guess we're talking
Moto G,
mid-range Snapdragons, gig and a half of RAM, 720p displays.
Those phones worry me.
Which company was it that that said a bunch of times that they were going to focus on like premium handsets and nothing else?
Yeah, HTC says a lot of things.
I love it when Russell trolls.
That would be HTC. How many times have we heard him say we're going to focus on blah blah blah? But I mean, really, for them, Desire's what's making the big money. That's the huge seller now.
And the Desire you could buy in the past was a pretty good phone, and it
still
was
still is.
Yeah, and it's a little bit cheaper than most phones, but these. I hate to use the word bottom end, these low price offerings from HTC. I'm really curious. I want to use some of them to see how they compare with other phones that actually cost less.
So I actually reviewed I think it was the Desire 410 about 11, 10 months ago, which is their sort of bottom end LTE play for Europe. I think for the price is about £150 when they launched it over here. And the balance back then was you got LTE, you got a relatively fast chip, but the build quality was kind of basic and the screen was total garbage. So hopefully things have shifted a little bit away from, okay, you've got to get LTE and you've got to have this constrained price, so there are a bunch of other compromises. Maybe if they're shooting for the lowest end is maybe, I think they were saying 540 by 960 or whatever. Maybe if they're hitting that mark, then there isn't such a compromise that you saw last year with a similar kind of product.
I'm really curious I don't want to prejudge them. The specs, I mean, I'll admit, I'm like a lot of the people listening. You saw those specs and you went, ooh, that's kind of scary. But maybe it's not. We need to actually give them a shot.
And we're talking $200 to $300.
Right.
Maybe a little less than some prepaid carriers that are doing rebates and whatever. And you get some models on prepaid, some are postpaid. And the postpaid models, obviously, are going to be like the $49 to $99 on contract kind of price.
But we've just seen a couple really strong contenders in that $300 price range this year, and that's got to be something that the bigger name HTC, Samsung, Motorola, they know they've got a little work to do if they want to compete at that price point. And I'm curious to see how well these things are going to.
Well, this just kind of hits that middle range of the prepaid phones that the prepaid carriers actually sell. So like a Metro PCS. They want to have a range, they don't want to just, they'll sell you an iPhone 6 and a Galaxy S6 for like $650, or they'll sell a lot of phones and like $150. So they also want that mid-range as far as price point goes.
See, I'm trying to sidestep without saying anything that's going to get me hate mail, but I'll use this Idol 3 as an example because I've been playing with it again since it got an update. It runs better than the G4. I know it really doesn't. But on your appearance, the you flip through your home screens or you tap to open an app, because it's so lightweight and it's not doing anything, its performance level is better than the G4 with its little bit of jank. I know in the background, the G4 is doing a lot more and it can bring things to the front faster, but first appearances matter and I want to see how HTC handles that.
I would still like to see them sell phones on their own.
Me too.
Or I was kind of surprised that we didn't get. Sorry, I was kind of surprised we didn't get something a little bit higher end. You understand the need for, you know, these mid and low end, especially prepaid stuff. But I was surprised we didn't see HTC maybe push something like the Desire 820, the Desire 826, to that same sort of $300 locked off contract. Okay, kind of a good phone, but at that key sort of new mid range level.
And also just
I think they could do a really good job there.
And just selling the same devices direct would be pretty awesome. I mean, they'll sell you an M9 unlocked, and you can put that on whatever prepaid carrier you want. But now they're doing this, you know, partnering with prepaid carriers. I mean, I guess at some point it makes some kind of financial sense to them. But, man, you know, prepaid is a lot about switching carriers and bringing your own device, not going to Metro PCS and buying one.
Yeah, you could think there would definitely be a market there for a Desire phone that is higher spec and more expensive than what they announced this week. Sold unlocked from HTC Direct. They already have the storefront there that's selling the M9. And you know, why aren't, this is something that HTC could do really well. If you have Asus can do it, if Alcatel can do it, HTC can certainly do it. It's surprising to me that they're not.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of anything. It's, you know, we're in that weird spot with HTC again.
Just refresh the M7. Use the same leftover parts for the M7, except like the processor.
No multitasking button, just whatever.
Just bring it back. That phone was ahead
of got one in my drawer here, you know.
Yeah, I've still got a dev edition here, and it's...
I mean, what phone we talk about this week that you know, they literally don't make phones like that anymore is the HTC One S, one of the nicest looking, nicest feeling phones HTC's ever created.
And, and we started talking about it because we had that ZTE Axon event on Tuesday in New York, and that's another compelling looking phone. I mean, Snapdragon 810,
$450 bucks.
How much? $450?
Yeah.
$450.
And I haven't touched it yet. I've just seen our hands on that Joey Riz did and did a nice job. But yeah, I mean,
so that's exactly the same thing that we're talking about.
Right.
That's not going bargain bin like $200, $250, and you're like, hey, that's a good value play there. And it's not saying this is $650, you know, high end. It's saying we'll check all the boxes of those $650 phones, but we're going to sell it to you directly for $200 less.
And that's unexplored territory. If this thing runs as well as any of these $800 phones, that's amazing. And
it's,
I agree
it's
with
like
Alex.
The OnePlus One, but you can buy it.
I agree with Alex. A Desire in that category would be, I think, something a lot of people would love to see.
Yep.
Anything else news-wise you can think of?
Note 5. So we had things have been kind of leaking out in dibs and tabs with the Note 5 for a while, but we got, I think, a few reports early this week. They're going to go early, and then this August 12th date came out from, I think it was Sam Mobile and also Digitimes. Of course, Digitimes has a bit of a mixed track record. Sam Mobile has a bit of a better track record there with Samsung stuff. So it's looking now like we are going to get a Note 5. And
that's one month early on the announce and like 2 months early on availability compared to last year's.
Yeah, so I mean, the implication there is they want to get out ahead of the iPhone, which makes sense. You would expect with them announcing and unveiling it early that you'd also get a slightly earlier release date. At least in some countries, you also have this Galaxy S6 Edge Plus that's floating around, essentially the replacement, it would seem, for the Note Edge that was knocking around last year. No S Pen, it is literally just a GS6 Edge blown up to a larger size, you'd imagine with a larger battery as well. And that kind of takes the Edge place alongside the Note device this year, it would seem.
I have to say that thing's going to be horrendous to try to hold on to. I mean, the only thing redeeming about being able to hold on to the S6 Edge now is that it's only 5.1 inches and you can like wrap your hand around the edges. If you're trying to hold on to that thing at 5.5 or 5.7 inch is what it looks like about the same size as the Note 4 now, that thing is going to be tough to hold on to.
Syndrome.
And we still don't know a lot about the build of the Note 4 of that size, if it is just a flat device like the GS6 blown up to a larger size, maybe with curves on the back that are supposed to be there if you look at some of the leaks that have come out. That itself is going to have a whole bunch of ergonomic usability issues to go along with it.
My biggest question here is, why would you omit the S Pen? That, you know, I'm not a Galaxy Note user. But when I have used one in the past, the S Pen is something that nobody else offers. Nobody comes even close. It's also something you don't have to use. You can safely leave tucked away. If you don't care about it, it does nothing. So why leave it out of a larger S6 Edge Note class size device?
Well, it's kind of like they would leave the pen in the Note 5 and then have this non-pen version that has the dual curved edges.
I think they know that a lot of, I mean, that they, you know, Samsung does extensive market research. They must know that there's a certain class of Note user that rarely uses the pen. And of course, they know from the success of the GS6 Edge, supposedly, you know, the unexpected success of the GS6 Edge, if you read the news on this stuff, that there's a class of user that really likes the Edge features or just the way it looks and the way it feels. So maybe it's a case of, okay, we're going to cater to these people who just want a bigger phone, and we're going to use this Edge design, which has been really popular in the GS6 this year.
And as they know from the original Note Edge, it did not make a whole lot of sense to have the curved edge and the pen together. They didn't work together, and it was awkward to manage. So, you know, maybe the two models a little more differentiated makes sense.
I don't know. I just hate to see what I think is one of their best features on a big phone device get left out. I wish they wouldn't.
The answer there is always going to be just buy a Note 5 if you want the S Pen.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, there's really not been a high-end Samsung phone that's big screen without an S Pen.
Right.
If you wanted that device, it basically didn't exist.
The Mega. Oh, you said high-end.
The Mega. High-end. Yeah.
Yeah, that's.
I disagree. For me, that was the Note 4. I just left the thing in the silo.
Well, and that, I think that goes back to my point. You didn't care that it was there.
Yeah.
Well, Samsung cares that it has to pay to make the silo.
Well, that's true.
Fine. It all comes back to money. All right.
All right. So the next few weeks are going to get a little nuts here. I think we got like next week to get it all sussed out, and then it's on. Because after August, we've got IFA in Berlin, and oh my God, it's going to get nuts. So, with that, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about Russell's best week ever and see if he remembers any of it. Maybe. We're lucky. Hang on. Be right back. Okay, so maybe it's not news that supported open source is now widely accepted to the highest levels of enterprise computing, but the extent of adoption is probably broader than you think, and most of the open source running in elite data centers is from Red Hat. And it's more than just Red Hat Enterprise Linux, too. Red Hat offers storage solutions, cloud computing, and everything you need for application development, all open source, and all enterprise grade. The stats are eye-opening. Red Hat runs in every executive department of the U.S. federal government, every airline, telecom giant, and healthcare company in the Fortune Global 500, or the New York Stock Exchange, and every commercial bank in the Fortune 500. In fact, more than 90% of all the companies in the Fortune 500 use Red Hat for everything from the critical to the routine. The only thing that's really surprising is how many people, and these are people who know a lot about technology, don't actually know this. It's almost as if Red Hat snuck in, got comfortable, and quietly transformed the technology business without making a fuss. Sometimes the most disruptive technology is the stuff no one notices at first. To find out more about how Red Hat is quietly redefining enterprise technology, visit redhat.com. Red Hat. Build on it, run with it, count on it. Yeah, whose phone is that? Who keeps buzzing?
It's mine. All I can do is shut it off. What do you want me to do? It doesn't give me a
sit on
phone.
It. Sit on it. What phone is it?
It's the Nexus 6. It's just the vibration motor's loud enough to hear.
Turn it off. You're podcasting.
I got three of them going off.
Wow.
But that's the only one you can hear.
You only have three phones on your desk, you lucky devil.
Yep.
I only have one phone and a recap.
Call whoever it is messaging you every 10 seconds and yell at them on the podcast.
Oh, it's one of those group hangouts. You know how those can get. All right, I shut it off.
Got put on a hangouts canoe.
All right, Russell. What you been up to?
Nothing. I didn't do a single thing this week.
You started teasing last week. You're like, oh my God.
I've been so excited. This past week has been so cool. It's going to be a long time before I can top it. I started off day before yesterday. I went up to New York to hang out with the folks from HTC. They were doing demos of the Vive headset that you got to play with in Barcelona. in New York, and so I got to play with a slightly updated version that had wireless controllers instead of wired controllers.
Wow, that's kind of a big deal, because I kept tripping all over those things.
I'm a big fan. I've used just about every form of VR that's out there so far. I haven't used the commercial version of Oculus, because they just announced that, but I've used all the versions before. I've seen, but not actually put on, Project Morpheus. Obviously lots of Google Cardboard, the Gear VR and all of those. And this was something different. This was something where I could legitimately stand up and walk around the room I was in and interact with objects in this environment that I was seeing through the headset. It was really fantastic and just looked amazing. Was really happy with
recognizing
it.
The fact that this is a podcast and these things are kind of tough to describe anyway. Like, you really do have to experience them. But can you give me the sort of the differences between Oculus and Vive? So at least and that's why I was so excited for you to finally get to use this, because you have context for this that I don't.
Yeah. So, I mean, a big part of Oculus is to create a three-dimensional environment for the game that you're playing. My most common examples is Euro Truck Simulator. It's in the Steam store, and when you go to play it, it gives you basically are sitting in the truck that you're driving, and you can reach out with your hands and grab a hold of the joystick that you have sitting at your desk and drive this vehicle. But when you tilt your head and pan around, you are sitting in that driver's seat. And that's essentially what Oculus is. It's a fixed position where you've got head tracking, and this thing is mounted on your head, and you can see everything, and it looks really nice. The screens are fairly high quality, but it's the same basic concept as what we see with the Gear VR and Google Cardboard, where you've got that kind of fixed position and everything is moving around you.
Gotcha.
And the idea there is that it's computer gaming, where you're sitting in your chair at your desk with your controller or your mouse and keyboard, and you're doing that thing.
Sorry, let me stop you for 1 second. So Microsoft HoloLens is more AR, so you can actually see through it and interact with things. And,
right. Okay. Yeah, you're not going to see through anything with the Rift, and HoloLens creates that window in front of you where it augments what you're seeing with something else, which is something else that I'm pretty excited to try, but. That's going to take a little while, I think. But the HTC Vive is... you have that same ability. You could sit at your desk and play those same kind of games. But the way that it works, it takes these light boxes, and you can set light boxes and create what's essentially a fence around you with these light boxes and get up and move around and interact with the game in a much more significant way, I think.
I haven't seen a single person come out of it, and it's been fun watching other people I know who got to do it this week, like on Twitter and stuff, and just, they're like, oh my God, and I very much had that same experience too. But at the same time, I mean, I get why it's cool, and it is cool, but am I just not nerdy enough? Like, at some point, there's going to be some sort of retail version of this. Why would I buy it? Do you just really have to be into VR, you think?
You really have to be into a certain kind of gaming. There's a level of immersion there that ends up being pretty significant for those kind of games. I don't think it's going to be, next year or the year after before this is something that, even most gamers feel like they need in their house. And that goes for Oculus and Morpheus and all of these. Because, the television is still the dominant place where most of these games get played, and this is very much not something that you're going to be doing in the same room as your television for any of these experiences.
And it's also not something that's linked up to just, you can't just, it's not like just buying a PS4, plugging it into your TV, and you're up and running. You're talking
right,
about,
there's
you're
talking set about up here
a gaming computer and all this rig and stuff. It's not, until somebody can do a complete VR experience in a box, it's going to be tough.
Well, and that's actually something they weren't able to admit it when we were talking about it earlier this week with HTC, but because the Vive partners with Valve, the Steam VR is the kind of the underlying thing that plays against this. It's actually not hard for Valve to go, here is everything in a box with SteamOS, you know, in a box with, you know, SteamVR and the HTC Vive. And when this all launches, it really wouldn't shock me to see that. Now, it would end up being like a $2,000 bundle.
But it would shock me. I mean, they flat out said that Windows 10 is the best in way, and that's the only way you should experience our product, which turned me off to the entire project. Because for I was Steam like VR. You. Yeah, for the Valve. Because I was like you, I could picture, you know, a Steam box with the Valve and a Steam controller and all my games that run will run on the, you know, the open source version of the Steam box. But then they turned around and took all that Microsoft money, which I can't blame them for taking the Microsoft money, and that kind of put a damper on my enthusiasm.
I think there's kind of a disconnect between the kind of person that would want to play on a Steam box and the kind of person that would be an early adopter of VR, though. Your early adopters of VR would be much more likely to have a high-end gaming rig or to want to spend the kind of money to get that set up than someone who just wants an off-the-shelf boxed experience, right?
Maybe. Just allow me to be discouraged.
Okay. There's...
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me to see bundles when it gets launched.
I'm hoping.
You know, something. They're not going to be cheap. I don't think any of these are going to be cheap, but that's going to be one of the interesting things, especially now that Oculus is also working with Microsoft to do Xbox One games through this weird kind of you're sitting in a fake living room experience.
There's a lot of really good VR going on, but I've been more impressed with Cardboard the more I've been using it. I think
the advantage of Cardboard is that, you know, it's something, it's democratized, you know, it's something
it's accessible. Yeah.
Developers can quickly put together something for Cardboard. I've seen so many really neat kind of one-off examples where, you know, they get handed out for press stuff. They get handed out for quick hands-on. There was a realtor group that was thinking about sending them to customers who were interested in looking at homes, where they just, you know, stick your phone in Cardboard and you can do a virtual tour of the home that you're potentially looking at. You know, I think that is this, you know, taking VR and making it so that it really is something every single person can use. And that is really important, I think.
My kids are having a blast with it.
I think it's a great example of doing the most with the least.
Yeah.
That's what Cardboard is. I mean, I think everybody here has used an Oculus at the minimum. I haven't seen a Vive yet, but I've played with an Oculus. It's a much, I hate to use the word better, but it's a more premium experience mm-hmm. than using Cardboard. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, I mean,
it's what I mean.
To me, it was the difference. I see that as the difference between, like, the Gear VR versus Vive. Like, there's a leap between the...
Right.
Yeah.
But then you go back and you see, well, I'm doing this with a viewer, and if I want to be super cheap, I can make the viewer myself with $2 worth of parts from the craft store versus, you know, X number of dollars for this thing I strap on my face. That's when you realize that Cardboard does so much with so little.
It's really, really good. I've already had to buy more for my kids because they've been using it so much it tore up. I mean, it's Cardboard. My dog ate one of them, actually. but yeah, it's... For what I've spent on that, which at this point is all of, you know, $40, they're having just a hell of a lot of fun with it. So if you don't mind, you know, sticking your kid's face this far away from a phone, and, you know.
I'm talking with the local glass shop.
Oh, yeah.
I gave them one of the VR kits you can download from Google
mm-hmm.
to make me one out of smoked plexiglass. If they can do it cheaply, I'll have them make two and send one to you.
Now, why is that different? Or is it just...
Well, your dogs won't chew it up and your kids won't be able to break it.
Oh, you mean that, like, the whole thing out of plexiglass?
Yes.
Ah. Huh.
If they can do it without chewing Jerry's arm and leg off.
Hey, Russell, which demos did you do? You did the... Was it Half-Life?
No, it was Portal.
Portal, that's what it was.
I did the Portal demo, which was by far my favorite. Although I will say, having Gladys drop down out of the ceiling and yell at me was terrifying.
That one in Barcelona too, but I don't know. I'm not a gamer, so like I didn't know. I didn't.
No, that was like nerd heaven for me as soon as I realized I was in Aperture Labs.
Is Portal everything I dreamed it would be?
It was so good.
Jeez, that's.
Is that the only one you did? Much.
No, so they also put me on a ship underwater with some whales.
Yep.
They put me in a room and had me cook some soup.
Yep.
Did you?
I dropped the pan and like moved my foot out of the way because I didn't want it to hurt. And I was like, it's not actually heavy.
Yep. They, what else did they have me do? They gave me this paint set. Mm-hmm. Where like I had this palette in one hand and like a paintbrush in the other, and yep. I could go and mess with the palette. And it took me a second to realize that I wasn't painting on a flat surface. I was painting on a three-dimensional surface.
And you could walk through it. And,
yeah. So I created this image, and then the guy tells me to, you know, to turn the handle on the controller that I've got, and I can see more options on this palette, including like this, this rainbow that was flickering and this fire. And so I ended up selecting the fire and just drawing this massive circle of fire around me and just staring at it. I begged them so hard to let me just take a screenshot of it and share it, but they wouldn't let me. Like, I pleaded. That was so cool.
Yeah.
There's part of me inside that hopes so much you drew a picture of a little thing you also 3D printed.
I didn't have quite enough time for that, but it was on my list.
Dick butt. We can say it.
I'll see. Say it. Okay. I wasn't sure if I could say it or not.
I'll say it.
I can imagine Russell traveling 450 miles to draw big dick butt pictures in VR.
It was on my list, but then they started up the next demo.
We've got a post up on the site. HTC has this big truck they're taking around all over the place and letting, you know, just anybody try Vive. So go find it, see if it's in your city, and I highly recommend doing it. It's very, very cool. So back to the cardboard again. Another quick little stop you made while you were up in New York. You got to meet Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Yeah. He was at a Disney event talking about this VR addition to the Watch Disney Junior app, and so I got to talk to him a little bit about, you know, cardboard as a practical concept. And it was kind of funny because he initially kind of shrugged it off a little bit and was like, yeah, it's, you know, it's just like a ViewMaster, except, you know, you've got a little more interaction. So, you know, this is cool, but it's stuff that we basically had access to for a while. And then he put it on his face with the app running and he went, oh, whoa. So this is like everything is oriented here in space and I can move around and see stuff. And it was kind of funny to watch him kind of experience that right in front of me.
It was great. He's like, hey, there's this star or whatever it was, you know, and there's that one and that one. Whoa, hey, it was really cool to see. I mean, it's almost like watching your kids experience cardboard for the first time. Watching a grown man do it, let alone, you know, one that smart and that just, you know, experience was really cool.
Yep, that was definitely a lot of fun. Talking to him is definitely the highlight of my week, I think.
I would like to think he's just going to get behind cardboard 100% and it's gonna owe it all to Android Central.
I would buy up Bill Nye edition cardboard.
It was really funny. He was before he put the one that I handed him up to his face, he goes, yeah, so I had a couple of these. Someone gave them to me the night of the Terminator premiere. We went to see Terminator and they handed me a couple of them, and I actually didn't use it because they told me that it didn't work for my iPhone. And my heart sunk into my chest.
Oh. Well, actually, I asked you that a couple weeks
you
ago.
You should have just handed him whatever phone you have and said, here, take this, Mr. Nye.
Phil will buy you another one. No, I asked you that a couple weeks ago, didn't I? I mean, there are iPhone apps for cardboard, right?
There are definitely iPhone apps for cardboard. And,
but that doesn't mean the people that have made one that works on Android will also make it available for the iPhone.
Well, that's
unfortunately.
True.
Yeah.
This one in particular is going to be available on the iPhone.
So best week ever or best week ever?
Definitely best week ever. I'm going to have a hard time topping it. It's not going to stop me from trying, though.
He says that, but, you know, he's only worked here 8 months, guys. You never know.
Still time.
Just saying.
You mean you're going to break his spirit sooner or later?
Well, yeah, definitely. No, that's a given. I mean, come on.
In a year from now, your best week ever will be a week where Phil didn't yell at you 7 times.
Phil was on vacation for a week. It was the best.
Yeah.
Well, that's okay. I'll take that. I'm all right with
we
that.
Love you, Phil.
Oh, man.
At least while you're around.
Any other cardboard or VR we want to talk? I mean, there's...
I do. I am going to, sometime next week, have some thoughts on, like, actually talk to medical professionals about kids using this stuff. Because, I mean, my kids use them all the time. Your kids use them all the time. And it's a common question that gets brought up is, you know, is it safe for kids to use these? Because we got the same questions when 3D movies started becoming popular again. And you know, I'm sure that the answer is everything in moderation, but I really want to know, like, for sure.
Like, how long is too long at one time?
Yeah.
You know, is it 20 minutes? Is it 2 hours?
Yeah, I mean, something I noticed about the Gear VR when I powered it up for the first time last week, great big letters across it that says you're not supposed to use this thing unless you're older than 13.
Yep.
And that was interesting. It's the first time I'd seen that error message for this stuff.
I can tell you, and without going into too much detail, I have a little issue, you know, in the optic nerve. And if I use cardboard, anything more than 20 minutes or so, I start to feel not very nice because my eyes have been slightly crossed.
Oh, yeah.
So it will be really interesting to hear what, you know, especially if you're going to talk to who I think you're going to talk to.
Jerry knows who I'm going to talk to. I'm going to talk to the man himself.
Yes. I will love to hear what he has to say. Everybody, when you see the title in your RSS feed, this is one you want to read. Well, you want to read them all, right, Phil?
I forgot the best thing, and Jerry just reminded me about the Vive, is that it worked with my glasses.
Yeah, that's a plus.
I could put the headset on with my glasses, and it wasn't uncomfortable. It didn't smash the glasses against my face. And, like, apparently I'm not the only one who had that. Like, a couple people are like, wow, that was a really big deal, and it is. No other VR experience right now. Oculus, Morpheus, Gear VR, Cardboard, they're all terrible with glasses.
I gave away a cardboard today to the son of somebody here on my floor in the office, and the first thing he did was take his glasses off, and he's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, you can buy cardboard units that adjust.
Oh, yeah.
You can focus if you have to take your glasses off. But still, you know, the better experience would be to wear the glasses you spent a lot of money on doctors to correct your vision with.
And it was a noticeable difference, you know, when I was able to see that and not, because I mean, like the Gear VR has that slider thing and the Oculus Rift has a slider thing where you go and adjust and, you know, I've worn glasses pretty much all my life and you can adjust it to a point where it's not offensive to your eyes, but it never really gets like crystal clear. Mm-hmm. And just like every other form of VR out there, it does not matter what anyone else tells you, you are still going to be able to see the individual pixels.
Sure.
Like the screen, it's a ridiculously high resolution on the HTC Vive, and now I think also on Oculus has got a really high resolution. And one of the big things that came from that when the announcement came out was, you know, oh, cool, we won't be able to see the pixels. You are still going to see them. They're just not, like, offensively standing out.
Right, it's an inch and a half from your eyes, and it's under magnification.
Right. Yeah, the only time I really noticed it and, like, it stuck out to me was the demo room where, like, they have all the demo panels. And the VR thing is like a flat white background, and it really stood out then. Every other time, it was really fine.
4K VR, we demand it. 8K, 4K for each eye.
Ouch. All right, so that's VR. That's VR today. It's going to be a very different VR in 6 months, right?
Sure.
I mean, we're supposed to have Vive like to retail by the holidays, basically.
Phil, do you remember... What was it, 2 years ago or 3 years ago when Oculus was at Google I.O.?
Mm-hmm.
Look how far it's come just, you know, in its own development cycle. Look how far they've come with their own product. So the future is just going to be amazing.
It's going to be really interesting to see where the, not homemade, but you know, you've got, Samsung has its weird 360 rig. Google's using GoPros.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what comes out of that, too. If anything, but
we'll strap 45 Moto X's to Russell's head.
Just have me run down the street screaming.
Turn the video camera on all of them and say, Russell, go.
All right, you want to do some Q&A and some voicemails and we'll get out of here? Ben wants to know, if the Huawei Nexus has a fingerprint reader, how do you think it will be implemented? Hardware home button? Somebody else, I think, maybe sent an email on that too. You know, do you think it's going to be like one of those black spots on the back of a phone, or is it going to be a physical button on the front like Samsung does?
I'd be very surprised if Google just went back to capacitive keys to have a hardware home button for a fingerprint scanner. I mean, you can put it elsewhere on the phone.
It's going to be a flat plastic square on the back.
Knowing how Huawei has done fingerprint sensors in the past, they've always been on the back. And I think what was demoed at I/O was on the back of a Nexus 5.
So it'll go roughly where the dot is on a Nexus 6 right now.
I think more interesting is the idea that it possibly may just be on your screen.
That would be really cool.
Use the digitizer. I mean, we can't say that's what they meant, but some of the things Google showed kind of hinted at that, where it's just part of your digitizer function. They've nailed it down where it can read your fingerprints. So
you really want to? Do you want to try to use the first generation of that, though?
Well, I mean, that's what a Nexus is for. I hate to say it.
Yeah.
Well, the nice thing is that if it doesn't work, it's just a screen.
Well, let's hope. Let's hope.
I mean, if you find that the Galaxy S6's fingerprint sensor doesn't work for you, it turns into a home button, I guess, but it's still a button there.
I just don't see, you know, like what Alex said, Google's not going to go back to a physical button at the bottom of this. You know, no, that I don't think they want to do that at all.
Yeah. James says, "Hey, guys, nearly everything Google releases feels unfinished to me, and it's often left that way for years. I just can't shake the feeling they don't care about consumer software. I'm considering jumping ship to Apple. Does anyone else have this feeling?"
You obviously haven't used an iPhone or a Mac for any considerable amount of time. I mean, it's a weird perception that, you know, every iPhone update and OS X update is just perfect. It's not. There are all kinds of issues in the software, and that's not even considering looking at Apple's built-in apps, too. I mean, they're not perfect.
Google can make some ugly software. I don't mean necessarily ugly in looks, ugly to the consumer, dialogues that tell you errors, stuff like that. Apple does not make those mistakes. But Apple can have considerable bugs and issues in the software itself while looking pretty to the user. So, I mean, it's your preference. Which one do you like better? One is not better than the other.
And that also doesn't mean that Google doesn't care about consumer-facing software. They very, very clearly care about consumer-facing software. It's just software is hard, and user experience, more to that point, is hard.
And if you prefer the way Apple does it, they present it – I hate to use the word elegant because it gets thrown around so much – but they present everything a little more elegant. If that's what you prefer, dude, do it. Go for it.
When an app force closes on an iPhone, it's a beautiful force close.
Right. And there's nobody in the world that can tell you you're wrong for preferring that. You go ahead and you go out and you buy a new iPhone and you be happy with it. Come back and read Android Central from time to time, please. But I hate that thing where, you know, people are going to want to say, no, Android for life and iPhone sucks. And no, dude. Go with your gut.
Well, would ask, what phone are you using? Are you talking Nexus? Or are you talking anything else, really?
Because are you talking their apps in the Play Store? Are you talking Chrome? Are you talking their website?
Any other phone, you're talking a manufacturer / to a lesser extent, carriers take on top of what Google has done or supplanting a lot of what Google has done. And that's still something that's hard for a lot of people to understand. And I get why, but it's just not that simple. Unless you're talking Nexus, in which case, it is what it is. No, good question,
though. But I don't think it's really from a lack of trying or a lack of care.
It's certainly not from a lack.
A lack of resources. I mean, they throw a lot of money behind their apps and a lot of developers' time.
If you think it's a lack of caring, I mean, go watch any of the Google I/O videos, and that will change your mind in the first 30 seconds. Absolutely not the case.
We've talked to a lot of these people that work hard on their products. These guys are filled with passion. Every one of them. Every one of them cares. It's just the nature of the beast. You have two different approaches.
Ain't none of this easy.
Nope. And, you know, we just saw Google's earnings and saw that they have 57,000 something employees, you know, and they added 8,000 employees in the last 3 months. You know, they clearly are trying to put a lot of people on a lot of things that are consumer facing.
Mitch wants to know, with Flash having an interesting last few weeks, do you see Google ditching it in Chrome or perhaps setting it disabled by default? Yeah, Flash.
Well, they already have their own Flash implementation.
Right.
I mean, it's like I think I tweeted something out a few days ago that back in the early days of Chrome, having Flash built in this way was an advantage. Now I think it's got the stage where it's pretty clearly a liability to have this thing that is at the heart of Chrome that you can disable but doesn't disable particularly elegantly. So I think the days of Chrome just in general are numbered right now. It's this proprietary thing at the heart of the web that needs to probably go away. And you know, the fact that Adobe has really abandoned that on Android says a lot. I think it's just a matter of time.
Well, it was already a big step when they moved YouTube away from offering Flash by default for any browser and computer that could handle not using it. So, you know, that was a big step, but it's still included and it's not turned off. I mean, Safari turns off Flash and Java by default now.
I mean, Safari doesn't even include Flash, does it?
No,
Does
it not include it or is it did not turn it on? I can't remember.
It just doesn't include it.
It's not there. And the bigger issue is you have to have Flash if you want to see all of the internet. And I hate to push that old tired saying that so many, you know, opponents of people that hate Flash have used. But it's true. You go maybe to your local news site and you want to see sports highlights, you need Flash to view it. Until you can get it into the web developers' heads to stop using Flash, it has to be supported somehow.
I mean, yeah, you can use an extension just to make all Flash click to play. If you want to see where the entire Flash frame is, and just go around to your favorite sites and you'll see how often you have to use it.
And to me, that's a thorn in the side. I'm sure Adobe still loves Flash. I bet they probably still make money on it somehow. But the people making web browsers, whether they be Samsung or Apple or Google or Microsoft, probably would love to see Flash just disappear tomorrow morning. They wake up and there is no more Flash left on the internet, but that's not going to happen.
And a lot of the time you'll see sites that do, you know, they'll do a mobile page and they understand that if you view it from an Android tablet or an iPad, they'll serve you HTML5 there. But when you view on a desktop, it's still going to be cheaper and easier for them most of the time to serve you Flash, and they're going to do it there because for most people that are going to view that content, they still have Flash.
I don't know whether it's a case of being cheaper or easier. I think it's just a case of that's the way it is and the way it's always been. And that's just an assumption that has been made that if you're viewing on desktop, you're using Flash. I think
Have to re-architect that. I mean, it's cheaper because it's already there.
Well, now, a Flash player that you put a video in a container and you can serve it to the users however you want. If you use just the standard Flash container, there are a lot of options. Right click on the next Flash video that you find on the internet, and you'll see options that are just there that developers don't have to code in. And I'm sure that has a little bit to do with it.
I'll be happy when it's gone. I'm in that boat too.
Me too. I'll be happy when it disappears, but in the meantime, I still need a way to view it.
That is also true. Doug asks, do you predict that 4 gigabytes of RAM will be the new standard in phones and tablets? Sure.
Numbers will continue to get higher.
Yeah.
It's probably cheaper in 2015 to put 4 gigabytes of RAM in than it was in 2010 to put 1. So why not?
Sure. Ben wants to know, will the Project Fi rates fluctuate based on changes in rates for T-Mobile and Sprint? I doubt Google absorbs any future increases in cost. That's an interesting question.
They haven't, but they've hedged out their deals, and they cut long-term deals for bulk access to T-Mobile and Sprint. I mean, every MVNO, they just cut a deal, and they say, we can get this much access for this many customers at this rate for the next 3 years. And they build their rate structures on that. It's not a sliding scale where all of a sudden Sprint and T-Mobile decide to jack up their access prices. They cut longer deals than that.
And Victor wants to know, just how's it working overall?
It works. I mean, that's the biggest thing is everybody who just tries to think about all the little details and all the ways that it does weird stuff is overthinking it a little bit. If you're somebody that just signs up for it, gets your Nexus 6 and just uses the phone, it just works like any other carrier, and that's the biggest thing. You don't want it to be a hassle. You want your phone to just, you know, your phone service to just work, and it does.
I'm going down to the bottom. Pablo says, do you believe with all the leaks showing the Note 5 without a removable battery and non-expandable storage, it won't sell as many to the tech-savvy power users?
No, because I think, I mean, let's start with the battery. I think the way they're going to compensate for not having a removable battery is just to have a big battery. If we look at the size of this thing, I think the rumored battery size is something like 4,100 milliamp hours or something ridiculous like that. You can get around the need for a removable battery by having wireless charging and quick charge and a massive battery. I think most people would be perfectly happy with that. Removable storage, I think, is a bit more prickly, maybe. There are still a few people who would, especially if you get into stage with Android cameras, we can shoot in RAW, removable storage would be very useful, and it would not take up a whole lot of space within the phone to do that. I think there was some talk with the Note 5 with the SoC they're using that the memory controller would create an issue if you had an SD card in there, that you would need a bunch of extra stuff. That's part of it. I think the other side of it is it makes more sense with Samsung monetarily to sell you a Note 5 with more storage up front than to sell you one with an SD card and hope you buy a Samsung SD card later. It's just a better business decision if all the SKUs are available that they push you towards higher storage and say, you know, maybe you're going to fill up 32 gigs with a bunch of photos and videos. Maybe think about 64, 128. That's not an ideal situation, but I think it's just the way things are going.
Here's a good. Go ahead.
A lot of people think that Jerry is anti SD card because of some things I've said before.
Because he is.
I'm not. No, I am anti having parts of your operating system or applications on the SD card where they need permissions. But the SD card for sharing or for storing pictures and videos you've taken or music you want to listen to offline, that's what it was intended for. Google is making it easier for developers to help you manage your library of the stuff you store on there. And now we see manufacturers moving away from the SD card completely. It's just an odd cycle the way things went down. I mean, if when KitKat came out, if people stopped putting SD cards in their phone, not a lot of people would have cared because they didn't work very well. But now Google is making changes and making it easier for developers to do the things we want. And if the Note 5 does come without an SD card in it, I just think that's pretty ironic.
Here's some good inside baseball from Ashish. It says, Android Central normally scoffs at rumors. Looking at today's article on Motorola made me think, when do you think it's time to talk about rumors? It's a really good question.
We don't scoff at rumors as a whole.
Yeah.
I think it depends on the rumor. And not all rumors are created equal, right? You do kind of get a bit of a sense after you've been doing this for so long of what is believable and what isn't, and what is likely to be true and what is just nonsense, right? And that's just a judgment call every time.
And we can't ignore that sometimes we know a little bit of backstory to help judge these rumors too. That's just part of our job.
And meanwhile, on the other side of their shoulders is me going, guys, we have all this stuff that actually exists that we need to care about instead. And that's a big part of it. And like it or not, I'm in charge. And sometimes these guys have to listen to me, and every now and then I'm like, just stop. I don't care. And sometimes I'm wrong about that, too. And honestly, I don't know that we necessarily talk about it enough internally, but I think we're talking about it more. And maybe I'm trying to loosen up on that a little bit. And Alex does a really good job, I think, of rounding up all that stuff into something cohesive. A big reason why I like staying away from that stuff is you end up putting out all this information that might or might not be true. And then so when a device finally comes out, it's either disappointing to people who say, well, you know, I thought it was going to have this, or it was supposed to have that, or why did, you know, and what good does that do the story of this device when you have to explain why something that that never officially was going to happen, you know, happened, or did, you know what I mean? Just, I don't like putting out bad information.
Well, that and when you did find out your information was incorrect, how do you address that? Do you go back and edit things, or do you just ignore it? That's something that you can't just forget about either.
I like to, you know, and I'm going to say this out loud and regret it. I like to think we're better than that, and we're not always better than that, but I would like to, in an ideal world, attempt to be better than that. I think I hedged that enough. It's not easy. It's how do you balance being a company that publishes, you know, information, that needs to publish information, that, and you need to publish stuff that people want to read, versus, you know, things you know, things you don't know, things you don't know you don't know, things you know you don't, you know what I mean? It's tricky.
You know, it'd be different. We position ourselves as a site to get Android news. I hate it when people turn news into something that may or may not really be news. So you have to think of that from our side too. We want to make sure everything is as valid as it can possibly be before we say a word.
See, and I actually disagree with that a little bit. I think we've gotten away from the, at least the traditional quote unquote news, because, you know, I want to do different stuff. That's why I want to send Russell to New York to meet Bill Nye and to go play with Vive. And you know, news is easy to me. We can do news all day long. So our focus has shifted a little bit. But yeah, I mean, the pre-release stuff, it gets weird sometimes. And we don't always do it right. And a lot of the times it's my fault. I mean, ultimately, it's my fault. How about that?
Good. Glad you said it's your fault. That way I don't have to say it's mine.
It's my name on there, guys. Yeah, no, it's it's my name on there. And that doesn't mean I can't, you know, change my thoughts on it or grow from it or even, you know, swallow a little more than I want to sometimes.
But I think the takeaway is don't think that we don't know about the rumors. Everything is discussed to death by us before we write a word. Sometimes I sit here and say, my God, I wish these guys would shut up about that stupid thing. But it does. It goes around. We spend hours discussing it before we spend 10 minutes writing about it.
Hopefully we don't spend that much time discussing it if it only takes 10 minutes. I'm just saying. Get back to work. That's what I'm saying. That's a good question. I like talking about that stuff.
You're a dick butt. That's all I'm saying. Is I'm allowed to say that word?
Apparently. We've already said it four times, so, well, you know, whatever.
Eric wants to know, my wife and I were recording our daughter's swimming lesson, and both our phones shut down due to overheating. I have a G4. She's an S6. Neither of us ever ran into this on our old phones. Is this going to be common now, or was it just too dang hot? I don't know. Were you outside? Was it sunny? That's not going to help any.
Were you shooting in 4K? Because I think most phones still limit you to 5 minutes of 4K
at a time. Yeah.
Well, if you're doing 4K or high frame rate for slow motion, and it's 95 or 100 degrees outside.
And if you're in a bad signal area, that's not going to help at all. And I mean, just any number of things.
You'll get those overheating warnings just being out at the beach if your phone is out in the sun for a little while, whether you're recording the phone, or not.
Or just taking your phone out your pocket if you're using a certain Sony phone.
Get a recamera.
And seriously.
As far as older phones, they weren't pushing the limits of the processor, and they weren't shooting at the same high resolution, high frame rate video that they are now. That's why they didn't overheat.
Yeah, you're talking about last generation phones. Processors were very, very capable of doing more than just 1080p at 30 frames a second.
Mm. No, what Russell said though, get a Ri camera. Or, you know, a GoPro, if that's what you want to do. I still got something I need to finish writing about the two of them, because get a Ri camera. You're going to have a lot more fun, and you're going to worry less about shooting and more about actually having fun doing it, I think, with something more dedicated like that, whether it's a Ri or a GoPro or a Sony action camera, whatever.
If you're regularly taking pictures of your kids outside in active environments, get a Ri camera.
And actually, that brings me to one of our – oh, did my computer freeze?
Uh-oh. Production implosion.
No, I was trying to left-hand. I can't do a left-handed. I'm trying to use a trackpad with my left hand, and that just doesn't work well. So that's a perfect segue into the first voicemail, so let me get this going. Beach ball. Hey. Remember what we were talking about, perfect software on Macs?
Yeah.
There you go. That was it.
It just works, Phil.
Let me try this again.
Hi, Android Central team. This is Arjen van Hooydonk from the Netherlands. I'm expecting my first baby boy in November, and I was wondering if you could recommend the HTC Ri camera. Is it really a lot better than the camera on your smartphone? And is it worth the money when you compare it to, say, the GoPro cameras? Love the show and love to hear what you think about the HTC Ri camera. Thanks.
Although we just recommended it for, you know, when your kids are older and more active, either they're swimming or they're running around in the woods or at the park or something, the Ri camera is cool. If you're talking about you're just about to have a kid, pick up a point and shoot camera. Pick up a point and shoot camera or a Micro Four Thirds camera or something. Take really high quality images that you're going to want to look back at 5 and 10 years from now.
Why not, Jerry?
You're not going to want to see these re-camera pictures 5 years from now.
Why because not? This. Out of my pocket, picture, boom. No,
and you just took a really low resolution picture that
picture
you didn't need the active part.
Fine at 2048 on the internet. It'll be fine at 4x6. Sure.
Yes, it will look fine 2048 on the internet. Will it look fine when you show your kid that picture when they're 15?
Yes.
I don't think that picture is going to look good enough.
Well, that's because you're a snob with small hands.
Well, if you could get, seriously, any $150 point-and-shoot camera, take the best quality photos of your child that you can. The re-camera for active things, sure, or a GoPro for active things when they're older or whatever, they're swimming and you want to be able to, you know, jump in the pool with the camera, sure.
I wish this had a laser beam on it, just like a flash. No, and you know what? Andrew is right. You can get better quality photos with a real camera. Probably can get better quality photos with a Galaxy S6. But
and take them quickly, sure.
This, no, you can't take them as quickly as you can with a re. I'm sorry. I carry this thing everywhere with me now, and I'm everywhere. Just pull it out, bloop, 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 and all the pictures are acceptable or better. You can act like an idiot and wave it and get really poor pictures, but if you want to have a camera that you always can have in your pocket, the battery lasts a long time, and the pictures, 90% of them are going to be pictures you're happy to share with everyone.
To me, that's been the biggest difference between the Re and the GoPro is the battery on the GoPro in... Again, I'm using like the base model one, you know, $130, $140, whatever it was. The battery is really disappointing. It has like no standby time.
I definitely don't think that the GoPro is what he wants.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
I think you're both right. I think a dedicated camera for, you know, serious, actually, you know, taking pictures.
I mean, don't want to be that dad with like the DSLR and the 200 millimeter lens on it, taking pictures of your toddler.
Why not, Andrew? Everywhere. What's wrong with that dad?
Sometimes.
Not everywhere. I mean, that's on the extreme end of the spectrum where you're not going to carry that camera around. If you go pick up a, you know, a Sony RX100, that's something that you can carry around.
Yeah.
The DSLR is not something you can carry around. Obviously, the Re camera is even more easy to carry around. I just think that if you're going to, I mean, you're sure, buy both. Have a Re camera around to take pictures, but have a nicer camera if you're going to care about this and you want to seriously show pictures 15 years from now. You want to be taking 16 or 20 megapixel pictures with a nice camera with nice glass on the front.
Yep.
It gets back to my biggest problem with the Re is that as a dedicated camera, it just isn't a good enough camera. When you get into the stage where it is a generation or two behind what you get in the high-end smartphone, why am I carrying this dedicated camera around when current high-end smartphones can launch their cameras really quickly? What are you're losing maybe half a second or so.
It's fun, but it's
maybe
still
that makes
too,
a difference to you, but maybe it doesn't.
It's very much still accidental, very accidental. I mean, and that's not to say I haven't gotten some really nice shots out of it, and especially that one from Barcelona, if you've seen on my Instagram. But
my thing is, if you buy a Re, you're always going to have a camera in your pocket for when you want to just whip it out and take a picture. Maybe you can get better pictures with better cameras. But that's my thing with the Re. I carry it everywhere. It's even sitting on my desk. I carry it everywhere with me. Yep. And that's where it shines.
We'll have more on that coming up. But yeah, that's our long, short answer. All right, one more voicemail. And actually, I prepped the guys on this earlier. And we'll see if anyone actually has a good answer for it.
But really quick,
yes?
Isn't that cool that we have people calling in from the Netherlands?
Oh, and congratulations on your soon-to-be born son.
Yes, by the way.
That's a big moment.
You're going to stop caring about cameras all of a sudden.
Right, you're going to start caring about
be too,
sleep and diapers.
You're going to be too tired to care about cameras.
So buy the camera first.
All right, here comes Aaron.
Hi, Android Central. My name's Austin. I'm a big fan of your podcast. And Hi, Android Central.
I think about that, and Aaron was the first guy. This is Austin. Voicemails are hard, guys, especially when I have the names written right in front of them. Should I try that again?
Yeah.
This is actually the most important voicemail ever, and you'll see why.
Hi, Android Central. My name's Austin. I'm a big fan of your podcast and your website. I think you guys are awesome, especially Phil and Jerry.
Now, see, we can stop and talk about that part of the podcast for a little while, I think. Right?
Austin, you win something.
See, Russell wasn't around for the old days when people used to call in and just give us crap about that. We would be like, this question's for Jerry because the rest of you guys are idiots and nobody can answer it. I mean, Phil can try if he wants, but you remember I used to get a complex about it. Anyway, sorry. Back to Austin.
Hi, Android Central. My name's Austin. I'm a big fan.
Do we have to listen to that part again?
And your website.
Yes. That's unfortunate.
I think you guys are awesome, especially Phil and Jerry. You guys roll. But I have a question regarding the Nexus 6. So my parents both got Nexus 6 phones recently. They like it because it has a huge screen and it's pretty easy for them to understand. The software is really basic and I can help them with pretty much anything. The only problem is with their old phones, they were able to use Miracast to cast the screen to their TVs without a Wi-Fi network. Unfortunately, they don't have Wi-Fi and where they live, they can only get satellite Wi-Fi, so it's not even really worth it. So my question is there any workaround where you can cast the screen from the Nexus 6 to the TV without Wi-Fi? I know that the Chromecast absolutely requires Wi-Fi now, and I know that Google actually recently just took the Miracast support out of Android, I think during the L release. I was wondering if you think they might bring it back during the M release or anything like that. So any help whether I could help them out and get their phone screen on the TV without Wi-Fi would be awesome. Thank you guys so much and have a great day.
Do you need to hear that again? Should I start it over?
At least the first part. And why did you get first billing? That's not fair. Phil's name is on everything. Next time, say Jerry first.
So we discussed the fact that, yes, there's no Miracast anymore, and that also on the Nexus 6, there's no SLIM port, right, Jerry?
Right. There's no...
So you can't plug in. Now, Chromecast definitely requires a Wi-Fi network, but does it require... So for just mirroring, you know, when you go to cast screen through your notification shade on the Nexus 6, your Chromecast doesn't have to be connected to the internet. It just has to be on a wireless router at your house.
I'm going
to
bet you have to be connected to the internet to set it up.
I'm going to test this right after the podcast.
Yeah, we're going to...
Because we always think of needing, you know, you have the Wi-Fi router and it's plugged into the internet, of course. But, you know, what if you could just buy them a $20 wireless router just to be able to do the screencasting?
Anyway, but back to your question. You can still mirror your screen through Miracast with a tweak that uses some dev options. Number one, it requires rooting every phone that you want to do it with. You'd have to root both your parents' Nexus 6, which I don't recommend unless they know how to root them themselves and unroot them and reroot them as needed. And you won't be able to cast anything with any DRM protection on it. So I'm going to come out and say no. There's just not a viable way for you to wirelessly cast from your Nexus 6 to a television without a Wi-Fi network. And this
is tough because it sounds like basically their phone is going to be their one portal to the internet because the satellite internet's not going to be great. It's going to be expensive. So, you know, getting like, you know, an Android TV box or something's not going to make a whole lot of sense either.
Setting up a hotspot on one of the phones, maybe.
I mean, yeah, that could work.
If it's a one-time setup process, you could get around that.
Use one phone for a hotspot to create a wireless network, connect the other phone and a Chromecast to that network and cast what you want. I guess that is an option, but that just, you know, I hate to even suggest you.
Yeah, keep my router going, but take it off the internet, reset my Chromecast and see what you can do on that. Cause that'd be interesting to see. You know, we don't think about this cause we're all, you know, we're hooked up to the internet.
Good question. Tough question.
Yeah.
Yep.
I hate it when there's no easy answer.
The Chromecast is clearly, you know, it's meant to be on the internet and meant to work a certain way. But if we can get it to work another way for $35.
I don't want to accuse anybody of anything, but, you know, Google wants to make it easy for you to use the Chromecast with your Nexus phone. And maybe they're not exploring all the options that they could have been because they're focused on just the one.
Sure.
Anything else? Any other questions?
Oh, pick one out of the Q&A. Don't end on a downer like that.
That wasn't a downer. That was a good question.
That's a puzzler. That's somewhere in the middle.
How about... anyone see one they really, really, really like?
I'm looking for one that says Phil and Jerry are great, but I don't see any.
We'll just do the top one. Cowboy Butler asks, is Cyanogen a Cyanogen mod version of Android losing steam? Since the original one-click installer, not much has been revolutionary in their releases that give them the big public name push. I think they're doing really good by getting in with manufacturers directly and cutting us out of the middle.
I'm going to have to agree that that's something that those gentlemen deserve.
As a business? Absolutely, yeah. Super important to do that.
But I will have to agree that the public perception amongst the people who talk about Android on the internet, they seem to be losing steam, but I don't understand why. Go ahead. You'll say it. I'm just going to beat around the bush.
It's because they're not targeting those users anymore.
There you go.
The Cyanogen team, they're not focusing on every tiny little tweak that goes in there. They're trying to build an operating system that everyone can use, and they're trying to target manufacturers who will sell phones to people that everyone can use. So, no, we're not going to see them trying to compete with, you know, the AOKP guys or, you know, any of those, the kind of indie mod groups, because those guys are interested in things that they can cobble together and do that are kind of neat tricks, and that's a lot of fun, but that's not what the Cyanogen guys are doing anymore, and they haven't been for a while.
It's grown up. I mean, that's how
They've moved a little bit further into their end game.
I also think not really the way it worked, but moving away from OnePlus, the kind of split that there was between those two companies probably moved them a little bit out of the possession of people who follow phones like this all the time. OnePlus built up a lot of brand value with the kind of people that were into flashing ROMs, were into the old side of Cyanogen. And I think the fact that those two companies are no longer together means that Cyanogen is kind of out of the picture and certainly not even a factor in the OnePlus 2 launch. So maybe that's worked against them a little bit in the short term, but of course that's not really the long-term plan for that company.
See, that wasn't a downer at all.
Well, no. I mean, I've met and talked to a couple of those guys. I know Russell has met and talked to all of them, I think, and knows them fairly well. They're good guys that worked hard to get where they are now, and any success that they're seeing from all their hard work, good on them. I hope they get more and more and more.
And that is a good place to stick a fork in it, I think. Did anybody buy a fork yet? I know we talked about it.
Could have got one on Prime Day. I'm sure there's like a six-pack of forks you could have bought.
That might have been like the best thing on Prime Day.
But they wouldn't have been like forks that you want. They're going to be like weirdly curved or like little baby forks or something.
I don't know. Everybody said that. My wife sure found a lot on Amazon Prime Day. I mean, my wallet is still twitching. So there was some stuff there.
Sorry. Well, as we are every week, we are brought to you by shopandroid.com. Hey, for all you G4 people out there, they got spare batteries in. I highly recommend taking a look. I need to grab one, actually, because I'm going to start traveling again soon. And I figured, as long as I can swap out a battery, I might as well take advantage of it.
Have they released a standalone battery charger yet?
I don't think we have that in the store.
Okay, usually it comes as like a kit. You get the replacement battery and the charger.
I haven't seen anybody sell. No, the battery's okay, too.
No, you want the combination if you can get it.
Andrew's really not helping here.
Who do you work for?
I know.
Yeah, I mean, my God.
Wow.
Or you could be like Phil and just have a second G4 and use that to charge your batteries.
I just wanted to say that, you know, we know that they're going to release a one with a charger, too, and you can bet we're going to look at that one, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
See, now we're on a downer.
Now we're on a downer.
It's all my fault.
Just let me zap Andrew again.
If you want to if you want to send us a voicemail like Aaron and Austin did, and I'm sorry, I forgot names all of a sudden, that was funny. Just record your voice, use your phone, somebody used a watch twice that's actually sounded good, go figure. And just email it to podcast@androidcentral.com. You can send us questions there as well if that's what you want to do. Love getting the voicemails again. That's so great. Even though it's a little more work for us, it's a lot of fun. It's so much more fun hearing your voices, I think.
I have a challenge.
What's that?
I want somebody to take one phone, pair it with a Bluetooth speaker, set a microphone beside it from another phone, then go in another room and call with Google Voice to send us a voicemail.
Why would you ever do that?
Because you can.
Hey, Michael on Twitter just says, bought a Ree while listening to the guys on the podcast talk about how nice it is. Can't wait to use it while swimming tonight. How about that?
Yes. Make sure you tighten everything up.
Yeah, actually, I ended up buying a new one this week, and I've bought both of mine retail. I don't know what I did to it, but I killed it somehow. And of course, I killed it as soon as I put the waterproof screw thing on it, and it just died. So I had to buy it. But now I have a proper orange one, which I'm pretty excited about. So anyway,
the most fun that you will have as soon as you get to the pool, press and hold, hit the record button, and just hurl it into the water.
Yep.
You know, go to watch the video afterwards. It is so cool.
Which is also the same result as handing it to one of my kids, actually.
I've been thinking about turning the recorder on and tying it to my fishing line and casting it out in the lake and reeling it.
Yeah, yes. That would be cool, too.
And time lapse. Don't forget about time lapse.
Yep, time lapse is cool.
A lot of fun. So podcast@androidcentral.com. Send us your voicemails. And I'm saying it again. I know there's some women out there. I know they're listening to us and probably, saying, really, they said that? Come on.
I was thinking it.
Send us your voicemails. We love hearing from you, too. What else should you do? You should go follow us on all the things. Twitter, Google+, Instagram. We're all over the Instagrams. I'm having fun with the Instagram, actually. Did I tell you how I'm doing it? Did I ever spill that one?
To us, you did.
Yeah.
Tell the people, Phil. Tell the people.
Arc Welder. I know, it's kind of cheating and probably a little hypocritical of me to do so, but
it's not cheating. It's just saying Instagram needs to get a full feature web client,
something. So that's how I'm doing that. It's a lot of fun. So yeah, go follow us on the Instagrams. We're saying hi. What else are we doing? YouTubes. Go download our app. We're still working on material design. Woohoo! Actually, we're hitting a pretty big milestone this week, so I'm getting excited about that. I think that's it. So next week, we'll have to see what's going on next week. I might need to move the time of the podcast a little bit because we do this thing in my office building once a month. It's kind of a businessy networking thing. So they want me to drag a bunch of stuff downstairs next week and show it off. Which actually, if you're in Pensacola and you want to come hang out and say hi, look for a link to that. I'll dig one up and send it out and you can come hang out with us next Friday afternoon. I think it starts at like 5:30, something like that, in Belmont DeVilliers.
I'll book a flight right now.
I know. Come on down.
Wine tasting and cheese and stuff.
There's, actually, they have a little food. I forget if it's paid or what. I just show up because I work here. But yeah, I got that coming up next week. So we might need to move the time of the podcast a little bit. We'll see. Maybe go earlier.
Hey, maybe somebody can come early and they can be on the podcast.
Hey, that'd be interesting.
Yep. Aren't you glad I said that out loud?
Yes, thank you, Jerry. I work on the fourth floor. We don't have a fourth floor. Anyway, thanks, Jerry.
You're welcome, Phil.
All right. That's it for this week. Thank you, everybody, for watching live. Everybody listening later, you are all awesome. Even you. Yes, I know you were thinking it. You're awesome, too. It's okay. We love you. See you all next week.
Bye-bye.
See you later.
Adios.